you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Mike Seid with Charlie Remeliotis from NBCSportsChicago.com. I am Pat Boyle. 3 weeks away from the trade deadline. Rumors. How you doing, Charlie?
How's it going, Pat?
It's going okay. Look, you know, the team is in the midst of its longest win streak of the season with four straight games. They've got two big games this week against teams that are ahead of them in the standings if they're trying to get back into this wild card race, which, again, is tough. They have to win, like, go like 21-9 or something like that the rest of the way. But with that, there are plenty of rumors between now and the February 25th trade deadline. One that came out on Saturday was from Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, who said that, basically that Seabrook was already approached by the Blackhawks and asked if he would consider removing his no movement clause, and that the answer from Seabrook was no. So on Monday, before the Blackhawks made their way to Edmonton, we talked to Brent Seabrook and Patrick Kane about the rumors.
No, I haven't been approached by anybody, so I don't know where the reports are coming from.
When you hear that, like on Hockey Night in Canada, does it tick you off when you know?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm the last guy to know. I don't know. So I haven't been approached or talked to about anything, so it's news to me.
If you are approached, what would you say?
I haven't thought about it. I guess I'll deal with that one if that day comes. But, my focus right now is just to try and help this team get in the playoffs. That's what I'm thinking about. So,
your teammates certainly singing your praises and what you've meant to this room and the organization. What does that just mean to you, knowing how valued you are?
Well, it feels nice. I mean, you know, been with some of these guys for a long time, and we're all good buddies, and we've been through a lot together. So, when it comes to going to war, there's a lot of guys in this room that that'd be first on my list to join. So,
Frank, will you ever see yourself
playing? Like I said, I haven't thought about it. You know, I don't know what's going on. Just playing hockey.
Who knows where these sources and rumors come from. So it'd be nice to have Siebes as a teammate for a long time. I mean, we love him here, and I think he likes it here too. So, but once again, we're speaking on rumors, so probably shouldn't do that.
But knowing the position that this team is in, how do you not get distracted by not only rumors but reality that trades are going to happen?
Well, trades could happen. I mean, they might not. We'll see what happens. But try not to focus on that stuff. I mean, that's part of the business, right? You know, the trade deadline comes. You know, trades are made throughout the season. Guys go up and down. It's just, you know, part of the business. So I think we can control in here. Try to just focus on that next game, win that next game, and keep trying to get points here.
What does he do behind the scenes that we don't see? What value does he have?
Oh, he's the best. He's absolutely hilarious. He's so fun to be around. Great guy to be around the dressing room with. I mean, guys also scored 100 goals in the NHL as a defenseman. I mean, there's not too many defensemen that have done that in the history of the NHL. I think it might be less than 100, so that's pretty impressive. He's had some big goals, obviously, over the course of the years and overtimes. He's named Mr. Overtime there for a while. And, we just love him in this dressing room. He's a great guy to have around. Great friend, too.
Okay, Charlie, so, you know, this is, I think, something we're going to hear a lot about over the next few weeks. We actually heard it about Duncan Keith Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic had a report a couple days prior, before the Seabrook rumor. And, you know, judging by what you heard from Brent on Monday, what was your initial reaction?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It's difficult with these no movement clauses because it's unfortunate if these reports come out, because then it kind of looks like, at first initially when this got reported on Saturday night, it kind of read as Seabrook was approached by Blackhawks management about a potential trade and he nixed it. And that's not what happened. Seabrook was just approached and said, hey, would you be willing to move, or would you be open to moving if the right trade presented itself? And reportedly Seabrook said, no, I like being a Blackhawk and I love it in Chicago. And that's fair. Like, as a guy that's won three Stanley Cups here in Chicago, like, I would want that conversation with I would want that conversation with management saying, like, hey, this is what the plan is, not necessarily, hey, do you want to leave Chicago? But I'm not surprised that it happened. It's good that Seabrook got out in front of this, because it was maybe a little bit of a distraction. Fans kind of got on him for, like, not waving it, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing right here, look, Stan would not be doing his job if he didn't approach Duncan or didn't approach Brent and had the conversation. I think, though, that those two in particular, and anybody who's, you know, hoisted the cup, that's been a part of this dynasty here in Chicago, they deserve a little different treatment than the rest of the guys in that room. So I think where I you know, take exception with maybe how this comes out is, you know, Brent should be the one that if this conversation happens, it should stay in-house, and it should not get out, especially on national television, Hockey Night in Canada on a Saturday night. I mean, that it doesn't get a bigger stage. So I can imagine when he comes off the ice after a win, his phone is blowing up, and, you know, that's the tough spot here. And I just hope that, you know, over the next few weeks, that management is giving these guys that have won, Brent, Duncan, whoever, you could even put Sod in that boat, he's won two, at least give them an idea of maybe where you're going, what you're thinking, and, you know, keep that in-house.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like you said, that's the tough spot about this, because now it puts him in a little bit of a bad, you know, a tough light with fans, because it makes it seem like he's hamstringing the Blackhawks by not waiving it. And it's his complete right that's the reason why there's a no movement clause in it. So he can, you know, he's got two kids. He's made a home here in Chicago. Like, that, he deserves to waive that no movement clause. I guess the challenging part is these rumors are gonna happen from now, and even with Duncan Keith, like, I'm not sure. The report said that Seabrook they're still gonna try to test the market. I'm not sure there is a market for him. There might be a market for Duncan Keith.
I think there definitely is.
There definitely is a market for Duncan Keith. So that, it's gonna be challenging about, like, what if Duncan Keith wanted to move? Like, that's a conversation that you have to have, sure, with him. So it can't be, you know, we're gonna have this conversation with Duncan Keith, you know, in case he wants to go somewhere else and finish his career elsewhere and not be a part of this maybe transition phase. And Seabrook has the same exact right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I brought it up on one of our last podcasts. It's all about being honest with yourself, honest with where your team is at, your roster's at, and then honest with those key figures, those leaders that you're considering moving. And so, you know, as we sit right now, you know, the Hawks have, what, 49 points. They've won four straight. They're, what, 5 points out of the second wildcard spot, which is held by Vancouver. Look, you look at the model that they have on The Athletic. There's a 6% chance of making the playoffs, even if they somehow miraculously won 21 of their 30 or whatever it is to get in the back door. Are they really a viable cup contender? I don't think this is like years past where just get us in the dance and we'll see where it goes. Not with a goals against around four. They're giving up almost four goals a game. I mean, it's hard to win games like that when you're porous defensively. So be honest with yourself as a franchise right now. And I think Duncan Keith does have a lot of value out there because I think he's making, what, his cap hit is 5.5. The real money he's owed is much less. If you look at the money.
I think, yeah, over the course of that back half of the contract, that's why it could be appetizing for a lower market team that
Absolutely.
Says, hey, like this guy could definitely help.
And let's be honest, you know, when you saw Kempney go to Washington last year and he gets paired with Carlson, like, you didn't think he was a good top four defenseman here, but all of a sudden he went and was paired with a top four defenseman, and his game, he was an integral part in them winning the Stanley Cup. I think if Duncan Keith went somewhere and was paired with the right guy, you would see a different performance from him on the ice than you've seen the last 2 years. Am I crazy?
No, you're absolutely correct, and I would say the same thing about him in Chicago. Like, if you paired him with if you paired him with the right guy in Chicago, I honestly believe there hasn't been a drop-off in Keith's physical play. Like, I still think he is there. He's got a lot of hockey left in the tank. I just think sometimes when you're in this transition phase and you're at the bottom of the standings, sometimes it's easy to mentally check out, and you lose focus a little bit in games, and it's not the same when the Blackhawks were the best team for a decade. Teams are giving you their best every single night because they want to beat the Blackhawks, and that's not the case anymore. The Blackhawks are the underdog. So I still don't think it would be wise for them to trade Duncan Keith. Like, I still think that's like, I don't see how you get better by moving a guy like him. Like, you just create another hole.
I think, like, what you're saying is, If we both agree that defensively that's the biggest question mark with this team in the immediate future, not only this year but going forward, knowing that you've got young guys that are on the horizon, but again, they're all coming in together to the league, getting baptized in their first and second year together, to think that they're all going to mature at a high rate and all play out and all end up being legit NHL defensemen is foolish. And having somebody, a two-time Norris Trophy winner, who, if he's paired with the right guy, his game, it's not going to look like it does right now and for the bulk of last year. So, you know, that really comes down to, you know, being honest with yourself. Like, okay, you've got the defenseman stockpiled that you've drafted over the last few drafts, but legitimately, how many of those are going to hit? And, you know, can you hope that they all hit at a rate that is going to see this team get to the promised land in the next couple of years? Because, like, next year, if you've got all, you know, Ian Mitchell, Boqvist, Beaudin, pairing it with Forsling and Joakim Harju, I mean, that's a lot of uncertainty at the most critical position, the most deficient position on your roster.
Right, and that's assuming, too, that their progression is going to be linear, where it's, you know, next year they might be rookies, but then, okay, well, they got a year under their belt, and the next year they'll be better. Like, look at Joakim Harju right now. You know,
he'd,
like,
go to the World Juniors, gain the confidence, get the couple goals, come back, and it would pay off.
Right.
Hasn't worked out that way.
And it goes back to our conversation about Seabrook and Keith and their no-movement clauses. These are the conversations you want to have with them, because this is the blue line that they need to fix. And these are all the young guys that you're going to have this influx of young talent on the blue line. And this is why you want to go to those players and say, hey, this is what our plan is, like you said, about being honest with yourself. I don't think anything from now until the trade deadline, like, you have to know what your plan is right now. Like, nothing for, if the Hawks rattle off, let's just say, like, 6 or 7 wins in a row, like, that can't change the plan.
No, it shouldn't.
It should not, because
I have a feeling it might. That's the weird thing. Do you?
I don't think so.
You think that they know, like, right now, they're sellers, and they've been sellers for the last 2 weeks, and nothing they do over the next week and a half to 2 weeks is going to change that. I hope you and I are right, and people that are looking at the big picture are correct on that. I sometimes I don't know.
But I don't think they're going to be sellers in a way that, okay, they're going to look at the roster and say, this guy can go, let's just clear the decks. Like, they want to do some hockey trades. They want to do, like, the Dylan Strollman and Nick Schmaltz trade. That was clearly a trade that was for the short term and the long term. I don't think they'll necessarily trade a Brandon Saad or an Artem Anisimov just to clear the decks. Like, I think they're going to want some, they don't want to create more holes. You know, they want to continue building around this core foundation, and, you know, so that's why I don't think the plan should change. But I do think the plan is they're still going to sell the spare parts, the bottom six guys that, you know, create some roster spots for the young guys.
We're going to get to the possible candidates that we could see leaving the Blackhawks over the next few weeks coming up in just a bit. I want to touch on one thing that we discussed before Monday's practice, as we're watching Monday's practice. Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are both on pace for career seasons. And to think that two guys, top 100 players, we know the accolades, the accomplishments, that they could have career years and the Hawks are nowhere near the playoffs. What does that say about this team?
It's we were talking about it during practice, you know, off the podcast, but I think the Blackhawks were really expecting Kane and Toews to bounce back and Saad and DeBrincat to take that next step, and all of them have. But to think that Patrick Kane is going to put up an 115-point pace again next season and Jonathan Toews is going to average a point per game again next season, like, that's hard. Like, you knew they were going to bounce back, but not in a huge way where it's like they're having career years and you're just not taking advantage. Like, that's the part that's a little concerning, because you're going to need to surround them with depth. Like, they cannot do that next year. They're playing a lot of hockey. Like, Patrick Kane is playing the best hockey of his career, but by far the most ice time of his career as well. And he's going to get, you know, eventually that mileage is going to catch up to you. Like, it's easy for guys like Connor McDavid to do it right now, because he's 23. He's 20, however, actually, 21, 22 years old. Like, they're still young. Patrick Kane, like, he has a lot of hockey left in him, but, like, if you're tossing him out there playing, I mean, he played 29 minutes the other day, career high. Like,
and that's been the majority of the season. And we talk about this bad schedule that they have. You play those 26, 27, 28 minutes in two games in three nights. Like, it's not like he's doing it a couple of spots. Like, it's kind of on a regular basis that he's being double shifted. And that, to your point, also needs to be factored in with those that are, now look, I know he's not going to get the Hart Trophy this year, but he should, part of the question marks about his plus minus is because he's being double shifted out there and he's playing with fourth liners and he's playing with defensive pairings that are liabilities.
Right. And another thing is, how, especially during those couple of those eight-game losing streaks they've had, how many times was Patrick Kane they were trailing in every single one of those games? So when they're down 2-0 or by two goals in the third period, they're going to cheat offensively, and it's going to create those, you know, defensive lapses and things like that. So yeah, I completely agree with Patrick Kane and his defense.
One more topic on Patrick Kane on the heels of Super Bowl 53. You know, we got to talking to Patrick about some of the lengths that he's taken, Charlie, since 2015 off the ice. And we've chronicled it, you know, whether it's going to Tampa in the off season and changing his nutrition habits, cryo, different workout habits in the summer. I mean, the list goes on and on, changing the stick, whatever. He's always looking for that edge, that advantage. So we asked him about, you know, he's done commercials with LeBron. And I said, you know, do you ever pick these guys' brains in other sports about some of the things that they're doing to keep performing at a high level, figuring that, you know, they're somewhat apples to apples, LeBron and Patrick and Tom and all these other. And he said, you know, he read Tom Brady's book and he really took a lot from the nutritional side and some of the workout routines that Brady has gone through, who's now 41, and that Patrick is either considering implementing at age 30 or already has to his. And I've heard, you know, from people that know Patrick that, like, you know, he's not Toews exactly when it comes to nutrition, but he's not far off it. Like, he's really, really honed in on that part of his life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember asking him earlier in the season, when I think it was actually right when he turned 30, about guys like Tom Brady and Drew Brees who are playing at an elite level at their, you know, at 40 years of age. And I know it's a different sport, but that's the age we live in now, where guys are taking care of their bodies and they're not going out before games anymore, and they're, you know, it's just a completely different culture. And so to hear Patrick Kane say that he read Brady's book, like, I'm not surprised at all. And I know I know Mark Scheifele, the Winnipeg Jets star, he also read Tom Brady's book this summer, and he was a guy that I think actually interviewed Tom Brady's chef and, you know, just was all in on what Tom Brady's philosophy was. And it's just cool to see that carry over from different sports about it's just a different age now where guys are just getting better, and there's no like competition. It's not like how can we collectively grow our sport and get better together.
It's not by accident that they sustain greatness. Like, you try to wonder, well, how's 88 doing it with being out there with Caggiula and Taves or Strome and whoever? Like, it's a different guy. Well, like, when you factor in all the things that he's doing to gain that edge, get better, then you sit there and go, okay, I see it. I mean, this guy works hard. He just doesn't show up to the rink and play 27 minutes and expect to, you know, have 4-point nights. But yet, that, you know, that's what we see from afar. But when you zoom in and listen and look at all the different things he's doing, you're seeing all the steps and measures that he takes. It pays off on the score sheet.
Yeah, and he's so competitive too. I remember watching the All-Star game, you know, the other week, and I thought he was like the one player that was trying like the hardest. Like, he wanted to win. Like, it was cool to see, because he's just, that's his competitive nature. Like, he, all weekend he had been like, man, the Central hasn't won their first game yet, like, in this 3-on-3 format. Like, we want to win. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're here, might as well do it. And it's not Patrick trying to, you know, oh yeah, we're here, might as well win. It's like Patrick really wants to win. So it just filters in every part of his game: nutrition, his habits, staying at practice later, and being with one of the guys. Like, it's
constantly
admirable.
Talking hockey with DeBrincat or Strome or whoever it may be. Yeah, it's not by accident that he has sustained this success. Coming up on the Hawks Talk podcast, Charlie and I will run down some possible Blackhawks players that could be on the move over the next 3 weeks before the February 25th trade deadline.
Get all of your Blackhawks news in the palm of your hand with the My Teams app by NBC Sports. The best place to stream the games, watch highlights, read articles, and more. Download the My Teams app today.
Back on the Hawks Talk podcast with Charlie Romeliotis, I am Pat Boyle. All right, so we're 3 weeks away from the trade deadline, Charlie, and we both agree that regardless of what happens in the standings, they should be in sell mode right now. Be honest with themselves. They got an opportunity to, if they land, say, in the top five, they can select an impactful player. And in the coming podcast, we'll go over beyond the Kakus and the Jack Hugheses. We'll discuss some of the other names that are being mentioned. But to get into that spot, it might behoove them to make moves sooner rather than later. Not taking bad deals out there, but being proactive, like the LA Kings, who moved Muzzin, to, you know, help yourself out in the sense of weaken your team. I mean, I hate to say the team.
I know.
You know where I'm going with that. But I mean, that's reality. And there's not many times, hopefully, that this team is in this position right now. The building is still filled. They're still putting together an entertaining brand because of guys like Kane and Taves who are having career years. Hey, you know what? Suck it up for another couple months. For the short term, deal a piece that could help you win and strengthen your chances of landing a top 4-5 player who could be impactful next year.
Right. It's, you're not going to ever get any of the guys thinking tank mode, but if they're competitive, and they've been competitive for a long time now under Jeremy Colleton, ever since that 8-game losing streak, they've essentially been in every single game except, like, I can count them on my hand. They've just been losing these one-goal games. Like, they've been on the losing end of a lot of these one-goal games. So they're right there. They're competing hard, and they're buying into what Colleton is selling. But like you said, the LA Kings just got a head start on their lottery chances because they moved a guy like Jake Muzzin before February. So I think the Blackhawks would be wise of taking a page out of that book if they have been honest with themselves and they're saying, okay, we're obviously going to be in selling mode. Why not start, you know, maybe moving some players that you already know you're going to move? I don't know if you're just waiting for the market to heat up. I feel like a lot of teams are going to be doing this, where they're going to try to get, it's a buyer's market. Like, a lot of these teams are going to try to get out in front of it. And I know The Toronto Maple Leafs got out in front of it too by getting Jake Muzzin because they didn't want another team to snag and minimize their market. So it would be wise of the Blackhawks to do that as well.
All right, so let's go over some guys that could possibly be on the move. And again, some of these guys have minimal no-trade clauses or no-movement clauses. But I'll start with a guy that's heated up, played his 500th career game the other night, had two goals in that game. It would be Brandon Saad, who's been seeing third-line minutes right now. And when you take a look at Saad, he's got 2 years remaining after this season at $6 million per. A two-time cup winner who's approaching 20 goals. I think there's some value out there, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, he's quietly on pace to flirt with his career high of 31 goals. And he's doing that, and he really struggled to see. I mean, he was, when Joel Quenneville was here, he was almost flirting to be a healthy scratch, and now he's got six goals in as many games. So I would try to explore the market, but I'm not sure what – I guess what would you be getting in return? Like, I don't know if I would just sell him just to get like draft picks or prospects.
Yeah,
you know, like he would have to be part of a package of some other guys we're going to discuss.
This is where the plan is key. Okay, this is where getting $6 million in cap relief is more important to me. If you've got the plan, again, if you have said we are going to go after Panarin and we're going to pay him $11 million and tell him we're going to have Patrick Kane fly to wherever he's moved to in the next couple of weeks, and Patrick Kane is going to present, you know, I'm being facetious here, but you're going to go to extraordinary lengths to bring in Panarin, let's just say that, and to have that flexibility, that cap flexibility. Honestly, it may not matter so much what I'm getting back in return for Saad, and I don't want to get him for a bag of pucks, but it may, you know, like, I know Ryan Hartman garnered a one. Yeah, I'd like a one, but I mean, if I got two twos and two three, I can justify that, like, I'm going to take that $6 million and get that guy, and that guy's going to get me to the cup. Staying whole, you know, true to an up and down player who's got a third line role with me at $6 million, I can't justify that. So
yeah, I still think that, like, we're not we, but in general, like, we're painting this picture that Saad isn't like a useful player. Like, no. He's still a very useful. I think he could be a top six guy on a very good team. He's just not the guy I want driving my line.
Well, don't you feel like you're looking at his cap hit and saying, I don't think he's a $6 million player right now.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, but I don't know if that's a, like, if you're a team that's contending and you're looking for a top six winger, like, Brandon Saad's your guy for this year and next year. Like, you look at a trade like what the Penguins just did. They keep making these deals where they're guys that have term on their contract. Like, Nick Bjugstad is a $4 million contract for the next couple of years. Like, they're looking at right now, and they're looking at the future too. And I keep circling back to a team like Carolina who has a surplus of defensemen, and they need a top six guy. And oddly, they traded Jeff Skinner, and then they let Michael Ferland go. You know what I mean? So I keep circling as that could be a potential option about a top six winger. But again, I don't know if Carolina would want to do it because he's not the top six winger that they probably have in mind to get them over the hump. Saad is a guy that, you know, if you're looking for a left winger to play with, you know, a Jeff Skinner and a Teuvo Teravainen or whatever, he's the perfect guy. But he's not the trade deadline acquisition that you want to make to drive your top six.
How about Artem Anisimov? He's got 2 years remaining after this season. He's got the modified no-trade clause. He's 30. He's making 4.5 a year. So I kind of think that dollar figure is indicative of kind of the type of player he is. It might be a little less than that, but he plays around a $4.5 million player. Big teams that maybe need a center. You know, he would be somebody that with the modified no-trade, you contact him, and he's got to give, what, 10 teams that he'd be willing to? And I think you've got, like, 24 to 48 hours to submit that. Otherwise, you're able to, I think, deal him anywhere. And I think he had to submit 10 this past summer, and they just couldn't find a taker. But he would be one of the top guys that I'd be trying to move this trade deadline.
Yeah, I think that might be one that might work better in the summer, just because teams are probably not going to want to eat that salary for basically three postseason runs if you're a contending team looking to acquire him. And he's not the kind of player that's going to put you over the edge in a playoff series. It's more about filling out your bottom six. But I think actually his no trade clause on July 1st this summer, it's nothing. So after July 1st, they can deal him anywhere, even if it's for a draft pick. You know what I mean? So I think the Blackhawks are – I think it's more likely they do that than anything, because teams are going to look at the salary and just be like, well, we'll take 2 years of him, not two and a half.
And I know a lot of folks out there you're hearing Hayden's name being mentioned, Kunitz's name being mentioned. Look, I hope they hold on to John Hayden. I'm a John Hayden fan. I think he brings something to this roster that they don't have a lot of. And I still think organizationally they're trying to figure out exactly the role they want to say that he is. And then once that happens, he needs to accept it. So I still, but I guess it wouldn't surprise me. The one guy we've talked about, and you've been a little more of the forefront on this one, who's been an absolute revelation on the back end, who's been the, integral part of the resurgence of this power play since December 18th, now the number one power play in the league, it's Erik Gustafsson. Erik Gustafsson is got just 1 year left on his deal after this year at a bargain basement price of $1.2 million.
And remember when he signed that, everyone, it kind of got criticism because it was like they just gave him this contract that he hasn't exactly earned and now it absolutely looks like a bargain because he's been a top 10 scorer among defensemen in the NHL. I just think this is a guy that he's really the only defenseman that – I don't want to say he's the only defenseman that has value, so just trade him. But I feel like if you can package him along with a Brandon Saad or something like that along those lines, that's where the value comes in, because it's like you're getting a top six guy, but you're also getting this young defenseman with – supreme potential, like offensive potential. Like, he's going to change life on your power play if you acquire
absolutely.
Him. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's not just a throw-in.
Paired with the right guy, like we talked about earlier, paired with the right guy may pick up the slack in his defensive deficiencies.
Right. And the only reason you have to consider it is because Keith and Seabrook are not going anywhere, as we just discussed. Connor Murphy is still part of the equation. Henry Jokiharju is part of the equation. So and then we mentioned those defensemen, Bodan, Mitchell, Boqvist. You have to create spots. And at some point, you can't just be like, well, we like Gustafsson, and we like what we have in this guy, and we like what we have in this guy. But there's not enough room for all these guys, so you're going to have to trade one of them to create a spot. And they've got all these right-handed shots that are eventually going to – they're going to have to play on their off hands at some point.
Let me ask you this question. If we're in the war room here with the Blackhawks and – we had Erik Gustafsson and Gustav Forsling on the whiteboard, and we said, we know Gustafsson's problems defensively, but we think we can get him to here defensively. And then Gustav Forsling, we look at his situation, and, he's got – this is the final year. He'll be a restricted free agent. He's only 22 years of age. We've got the young guys on the horizon coming here. What do we think? What's his ceiling? Who would you be more willing to part ways with? Would it be Forsling or would it be Gustafsson?
I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of value for Forsling by himself. Like, if you package it into something. I guess the issue with Forsling is I don't know what his ceiling is because he can't stay healthy. Like, I don't know what he can become because all of his injuries have been weird. Like, they're bizarre freak accident injuries. Like, I don't know if you can trust it going forward. And he's been with the organization now for 3 or 4 years, and he's been in Rockford for 3 years. So, like, at some point you want him to take that next step in his development. And then he gets that opportunity, and then he gets hurt, and then he's out for a month, and then he gets back, and then now you're asking yourself the same question. So I'm kind of I think he's absolutely a candidate that could get moved before this trade deadline.
All right, well, I have a feeling we're going to have many more podcasts like this one between now and the trade deadline on February 25th. But that's a wrap on this edition of the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Charlie Romeliotis, I am Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, as always. Make sure you rate us. Charlie's really into a high rating.
We are. I keep looking at the ratings, and they keep going up. We're still at 5 stars.
Fantastic.
And write us a review, too.
All right, write us a review. And then, oh, by the way, Tuesday night, Hawks are back in action against the Edmonton Oilers. We will have pregame live for you on NBC Sports Chicago beginning at 7:30. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next time.